I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Say Radio News with Audrey Strong.
Sin papeles, sin miedo. Papeles, sin miedo. Sin papeles, sin miedo.
Hundreds of activists have gathered as the U.S. Supreme Court considers President Obama's executive actions on immigration. Terry Moore has a preview of the case.
Justices will consider the challenge to President Obama's executive actions on immigration.
We've got a lot of confidence in the strength of our argument that we'll make before the Supreme Court.
White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
You know, we're hopeful, but we'll see.
The executive actions were aimed at shielding several million illegal immigrants from deportation. Obama took the steps in late 2014 and accused Congress of inaction on immigration reform. Republicans accused the president of far exceeding his authority, and lower courts put a freeze on the executive actions. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
This is USA Radio News.
Have you been to conservativetribune.com? Now, this is one of the most visited news sites in the entire world, and the reason is simple. Conservativetribune.com delivers edgy and bold commentary of the news. They're unapologetically pro-America, unabashedly conservative. At conservativetribune.com, they don't make apologies for who they are or what they say. And if you're looking for more than just boring stories and simple thought, you go to conservativetribune.com. That's conservativetribune.com.
I'm Sean Hare, the site director at conservativetribune.com. Conservative Tribune is one of the most visited news sites in the world, and the reason is simple. ConservativeTribune.com delivers edgy and bold commentary of the news every day. We are unapologetically pro-America, unabashedly conservative. At ConservativeTribune.com, we don't make apologies for who we are or what we say. If you're looking for more than boring stories and simple thought, visit ConservativeTribune.com. That's conservativetribune.com.
Officials in Ecuador say the death toll from Saturday's earthquake is now at 350 and expected to grow. The magnitude 7.8 quake hit on Ecuador's west coast and toppled buildings in a number of popular beach towns. Over 2,000 people are injured. So far, there are no reports of Americans killed, but the State Department says it is working to confirm reports that some U.S. citizens there were injured. In other overseas news, the U.S. is boosting troop levels in Iraq. Defense Secretary Ash Carter made an unannounced visit to Baghdad today and says another 200 U.S. troops will be deployed there to advise in the ongoing fight against ISIS. That brings the total number of U.S. forces in Iraq to about 4,100. While they are primarily advising Iraqi forces, the Americans are able to engage in combat operations in certain situations. This is USA Radio News, breaking news online at usaradio.com.
Have you been to usaradio.com? The latest breaking stories, the hottest news, and the best radio all in one place. It's available for free on your smartphone, on your computer, and you can listen with your Bluetooth-enabled car. You can listen to classic radio theater, Daybreak USA with Angie Austin, and my new show that takes you from online to on air, your news feed on the radio, Trending Today USA with Rusty Humphrey. Check it out, usaradio.com. That's usaradio.com.
The tax filing deadline has arrived, and even though we got a couple of extra days to take care of filing income taxes this year, there are still plenty of people who will not be able to meet today's deadline. For those procrastinators, the IRS does allow you to get an automatic six-month extension. There is a catch, though. It only extends the time you have to file your return. If you expect to owe the government, you'll need to send in your estimated payment. And if you don't file the extension or pay your taxes, you could face stiff penalties. A college student wants Southwest Airlines to apologize for kicking him off a flight. USA Radio's John DeMaster has the story.
Geraldine Moxamy is his name, and he goes to the University of Berkeley, and he was talking on the phone with his uncle, speaking Arabic, while waiting for their flight to take off. He used an expression in Arabic that means God willing. He says he noticed a woman on the flight watching him, and then a minute later, they pulled him off the plane. The woman telling security that he was using jihad as a language, he was searched and questioned for 40 minutes by the FBI and airport security. For USA Radio News, I'm John DeMaster.
One of the most popular child actors of all time gets her face on a stamp. Shirley Temple gets the honor today to commemorate her years as a cute film star who warmed the hearts of a nation during the Great Depression. The Santa Monica native made her screen debut in 1932 at the age of four. This is USA Radio News.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon. The weather this afternoon is sunny with a high near 79. North winds around 7 miles an hour. Tonight will be mostly clear with a low around 49. West winds 5 miles per hour, becoming calm after midnight. Tuesday will be mostly sunny with a high near 70. North winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tuesday night will be clear with a low around 39. Northwest winds 8 to 14 miles per hour. Wednesday it'll be sunny with a high near 65. North winds 6 to 9 miles an hour. And Wednesday night it'll be mostly clear with a low around 40. Good afternoon and welcome. This is the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and we're very privileged to have with us today Linda Bryant, Did I say it right? Brian, right?
Yes, you did. Okay. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Linda is the director for the Center of Healthy Aging. That's what I need, healthy aging.
Don't we all?
I am getting there faster than I like. Let me ask you.
Sure.
I ask this of every guest that I have, whether it's on the show previous or this one. How did you get in this line of work? Because I know, like, some people say, oh, I always wanted to do it since I was a kid and da-da-da. Others say, oh, I needed the money and so a job came available. So, you know, I'm just curious, you know, how people get into the various lines of work that they're, you know, that they're in. Did you always want to be, you know, a nurse? And
yes, I've always wanted to be a nurse.
Wow.
Unbelievable. But I was quite young at the time, and definitely felt it was a very, very important thing for me to do.
Okay.
And I was pretty young at the time I was making that decision.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like I said, I had the county prosecutor on a couple of weeks ago on my other show, and he was like a social worker and a counselor before he became a lawyer.
Right.
Now, and so it's like, whoa, you know. And I just find it kind of interesting, you know, how people get into the various things, whether they always wanted to do it or, you know. Well,
I was 7 years old. I was born and raised in the Bronx.
Okay.
And
I was from Brooklyn.
Another country.
Yeah, right.
But in my apartment building, there were a lot of elderly elderly women at the time. And I used to visit them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of had that, I don't know, connection with the older adults,
right,
even at a very young age.
Right.
So I guess it was written in the stars, as they say.
It's kind of cool, actually. You know, I bet it helped them, you know.
Well, you know, it was a change in pace during the day for them to have someone younger come in. I think their children were all grown. I mean, most of them lived alone and had family, but not nearby.
Right.
So to have, you know, a 7-year-old
sure,
come knocking
Brooklyn,
on
not
the door.
Not right. In the Bronx.
That's
know?
Right.
But, yeah, no, and, you know, to have a 7-year-old or 8-year-old come, and, you know, I think that's kind of neat, you know. And, you know, back then we could do things like that.
Yeah.
Now, heaven forbid we let a 7-year-old go knock on somebody else's door, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's like, you know, it's just kind of interesting, you know.
Well, interesting in that particular building, and that's where I was born. My sister was 3 years after I was. There were 23 children. We were part of the post-war baby boom.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 23 children living in that building. So we knew so many people in the building because
right.
we played with them.
Sure.
So then there were the few older people that, you know, just were still hanging on in their apartments. So
right, right.
It was a safer environment, I think, back then.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it might have been, you know, but, you know, it's just, I don't know, it just kind of strikes me as, you know, sometimes we become a little overprotective, you know. I don't know, you know. We'd go play in the street, you know. I lived in Brooklyn, so, I mean, it's the same, pretty much the same as the Bronx. I lived in a big apartment building, you know, it was five stories, no elevator, you walked up five flights of stairs. You know, my mother carrying shopping bags and up, you know, because there was no elevator. And, you know, it just, if you know, you went and you were playing on the street, you know, it's not like you had somebody standing there sitting with you, you know. It was a whole bunch of kids and you were playing on the street, you know. And it's just a lot different now.
It sure is. It sure is, yeah.
And I don't know that it's better, you know. You know, I really don't.
It's interesting, though, growing up in an environment like that, you do get a street smart that I don't think the kids today, you know, in this very beautiful environment that we live in, and I love living in Hunterdon County.
Oh, I do, too. But
I don't think that they get the same street smart, you know.
No, and, you know, that's if they can get their nose out of their iPad and their, you know, all that other electronic stuff. You know, we were told to go out and play, you know, and that's what we did, you know. But now it's all, you know, click, click, click on a computer or on the, you know, iPads or cell phones or whatever. But, all right. Basically, you're the director for healthy aging.
Right.
What does that entail?
Well, the Center for Healthy Aging had a different name at one point when it first developed. It was Senior Services. Okay. And actually, there were three senior services in the county. And one of the reasons we changed our name when we opened the Memory Center, which I'd like to elaborate on a little bit down the road here, we were getting younger people that really needed to come in because of their memory issues. And so we felt it shouldn't be Senior Services. It should be Center for Healthy Aging. So it doesn't matter the age of the individual coming in. You don't mm-hmm. have to be a senior to have any memory issue addressed. But my role has been over the years to basically oversee and direct the program to meet seniors' needs by doing geriatric assessment. That's the first role mm-hmm. that we kind of stepped into. We then developed the Memory Center because we felt that there was an issue with younger people. Things have evolved a little bit more even from that. We also do capacity evaluations for those individuals who are in need of guardianship. And we will get referrals from attorneys, from physicians, from adult protective services, even from families that are needing to have guardianship to take care of this older adult who can no longer make decisions for themselves. So we do a number of different things. And a lot of what I do as part of my job is to go out and come to programs like you, Larry, and talk about it so people know where they can go right. when they have a need.
Right. If you had, excuse me, if you had someone come to you for the capacity mm-hmm. Section that you just mentioned, do you evaluate that person or how does
yes,
that
we
work?
Do. Well, we're looking at the ability for the individual to make decisions on their own, insight, judgment, the ability to recognize different objects. So we need to make sure that they have the ability safely to make decisions for themselves, where they live, their medical care, and so forth.
Okay. Do you – this sounds nasty, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you find that do you ever find, I guess is a better way to put it, a relative wanting control over the elderly person and the elderly person is fine and doesn't need a guardian?
Yes, we found that, but we also find the same thing trying to take over the individual when they want some control themselves. And there's, you know, a difference of opinion, if you will.
Right.
And it's important to make sure that you're, if the person isn't able to make the decisions, that they have someone that they trust and someone that has their best interest at heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's a place, it's a little tricky in that we don't decide that the person is going to need a guardian. That's done by the courts.
Right. Okay.
The judge asks us to do this assessment. We go by scientific testing to do what we have to do to
right.
determine the person's
right.
function ability. And we look at the history, the environment they're in as well, that all contributes to how this person is functioning in their own environment. And we make recommendations, but it's the judge that finally has the say as to who is going to be the guardian and whether the patient or the person is incapacitated.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, you read about some of these cases where, you know, people have pretty much abused the elder person.
Yeah, they're quite vulnerable.
Yeah.
They're quite vulnerable, and they are taking advantage of
their assets and so on and so forth, you know.
Financial exploitation is pretty common. We get a number of cases that we assess for Adult Protective Services, which is a county organization or agency, looking after those 18 and older who are having difficulty caring for themselves, whether they're neglecting themselves or they have dementia and they can no longer do the right thing for themselves. And they bring us individuals that need to be evaluated to determine just where their
right.
capacity is
right.
to make
right.
decision.
You, I'm sorry, go
ahead. And I just want to say, and many times the circumstances that APS or Adult Protective Services brings us have been the kinds of situations where exploitation, either financial or otherwise, has been an issue.
Right, yeah. It just bothers me to no end. But, you know, it's and unfortunately, from at least what you read, which I'm sure you have a better, you know, understanding of than I do, but I mean, that's me, it's just what I see and hear, that they're, a lot of times, they're family, you know?
Oh, and, yes.
And that's just, how do you do that to your mother or father? I mean, I don't understand that, you know, I really don't. I mean, you may not have gotten along with them or anything growing up or whatever, but, you know, you wind up doing this, that's just, I don't know, I just...
Well, many times we find that those individuals have issues themselves. Sometimes they have addiction issues.
Right.
Sometimes they have mental health issues. And I think that when you see that kind of a dysfunction happening, that's not something that happened overnight.
No.
It's something that has been brewing in that family system for quite some time.
Right. Yeah.
You can't fix things overnight in that situation. But sometimes you have to remove that vulnerable adult who is being taken advantage of terribly and protect them.
Sure. You mentioned the memory center. It's a Central Jersey Regional Memory Center.
Correct, yes.
What is that? Where is that? And what does it do?
Well, first let me just say all our services are located in our office. And our office is now located on 1 Westcott Drive. It's on the campus of the Hunterdon Medical Center. We used to be in the hospital, but we moved to the SS&B building, right, which is right at the end of Westcott Drive before you hit Sand Hill Road.
It's on the right.
Correct.
Yeah, right.
And we have a lovely suite in that building. And we see older adults, we see their caregivers, and we're seeing younger adults now with some memory issues. And it could be for any number of reasons. One of the reasons that we're seeing people is what they called mild cognitive impairment, MCI is what they call it briefly. And people with this condition are beginning to see a change in their memory. They do not have dementia at this point in time, but they are not functioning at full capacity. They can drive. They hold a job. They may be struggling more in that job. And so they're wanting to find out what's going on. And I think anyone, older or younger, anyone with a memory problem needs an evaluation to determine why they have it. There's many reasons people can have memory problems. But in the memory center, many people that come to us might have MCI. They may have depression. They may even have Lyme disease. A lot of the patients with Lyme disease have complained of this, quote, brain fog, unquote. We've seen some people that have gone through chemotherapy, and they've got this memory impairment from what they call chemo brain. Sometimes it's drug interactions that patients might be on. So it's important to determine what's going on with this individual, and that's what we try to get to the bottom of.
Hmm. It's interesting because, you know, I think a lot of us have some type of memory loss as we get older. You know, not dramatic or, you know, thing, but, you know, just like with me, it's names.
Mm-hmm.
I have trouble with names.
I bet you had trouble with names all your life, though.
Pretty much. <You know?
laughs> So it hasn't changed.
No, it's gotten worse.
Maybe a little worse. But you know, the part of that is just recall. You know, there's a normal part of not being able to remember the name immediately. You know, if you give yourself a little bit of time, give yourself a little bit of patience.
Yeah, usually by about 3 hours later, I'll remember the name, you know. But
you see, if you had dementia, you wouldn't even remember 3 hours
later. You see,
later.
But I remember the faces. See, like faces I remember.
Yeah.
You know, but names?
Right.
Like I volunteer at the hospital on Fridays at the main gate there, main entrance.
And people will come up to, hi, Larry, how are you? Hi, how are you? You know, and they'll go on. I go, I don't know. I mean, I know him, you know. And I even probably nine times out of ten know where I know him from. I just can't remember their name,
you know.
And I feel kind of stupid because, you know, they're calling me Larry and, how, you know, blah, blah. And, you know, it's like, oh, really?
Exactly. You know, exactly.
But, you know. Okay, so somebody comes to the memory center. What can they expect
if they come to the memory center?
What from their visit to the memory center? Say they feel like they're not remembering what they should, and you know,
yeah, there may be issues with memory in general that they're just not remembering as well, and we need to find out why. Why are they that way? And that's why it's important to bring them in, have an evaluation. And we do this through computerized testing. We also do it through manual testing that we have a number of our docs perform. So I think it is important, regardless of the age, to bring somebody in to determine just why they have this. And so if someone is experiencing memory problems, it can be expected that there'd be a visit to a memory center in general, just so that they could make sure where they stand with their evaluation.
Are there memory centers throughout the state, or?
I think that there are memory centers around. There isn't too many official ones in our county. But I think
we have yours. You know,
that's absolutely true. And I wonder, you know, if there's a place in Mercer County or a place in Sussex or Union. You know, I don't know where all of those individual places are. But
you you'd have to wonder. You'd have to. You would hope in the bigger populous.
Usually in bigger academic settings, you do see that.
Yeah. You know, like Bergen, like you said, or Essex, or you know, so. But it's after the initial visit, what happens then?
Well, when they come in for the initial visit, it's pretty involved. It's not like you come in for 15 minutes and zippity-doo through things. We usually have people in for about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay.
And usually when they first see the doctor, there's a complete family history because, as you know, in some instances, Alzheimer's can be a hereditary factor. And with mild cognitive impairment, that can be a precursor to dementia or Alzheimer's disease. So history is very important. You know, was their grandparents, were their parents involved with having any kind of Alzheimer's or dementia symptoms so that we can see if there could be a pattern. We also do a physical examination. And then we do some cognitive testing. We do some manual testing, but then we also do what they call neurotrax testing, and that can evaluate six areas of the brain, and it will tell us, you know, various functions that the individual does on the computer, how they do in those different realms of the brain. That takes about 50 minutes usually. And at the end of that, we get a printout that will show us which parts of the brain have been affected, and it helps us then make a diagnosis. Okay. Sometimes people might need further testing. I would say that a number of these patients, depending upon the diagnosis that we find, if they need medications, we will prescribe. We always let the family doctor know. This is a consultative service because we don't do primary care. Right. So it's important that the primary physician knows exactly what we found and what we recommend. We also do a lot of education, not only with the patient but with the family, so that they understand what this is all about. In some instances, we need to do blood work. In some instances, we need to do CAT scans or MRIs, depending. There's always a chance when you have changes in the ability to remember or to think properly, you have to rule out brain tumor also. That's always an issue that you want to make sure you're not dealing with. So depending upon what the diagnosis is, there may be a follow-up visit, especially if there's been medications recommended.
Right.
And On the second visit, you know, there may be a discussion how they're doing. We like to see people back anywhere from 6 months to a year for follow-up, because one test will tell us if it's extremely abnormal. But if you have somebody sort of on an edge or not quite what you're thinking is going on, you may need a little bit more time and then retest and have a comparison to see if there's a decline or an improvement. So we do like to see people back to just see the progress of the individual.
You know, if your mother was well late in her 80s and developed dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever, how do you relate that to the individual? Do you think it's hereditary or...
Well, usually, I'm sure there can be exceptions to the rule, but usually when it's a hereditary factor, you usually see Alzheimer's disease develop at a younger age.
Okay.
All right. You can see it happen in people's 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so if the history was my mother was 85 when she developed dementia, we're not really thinking as much of a hereditary factor, although anything is a possibility. If you really want to know, you need to find out if you have the APOE4 gene, APOE4 gene. And if you have that, there is a possibility that that could be part of the process.
I was only curious because my mother at 89 started to develop it. By 90, she was...
But you see that it happened. The incidence of dementia increases with the age. And so the fastest growing segment of our population is 85 plus. And the other statistic that kind of scares me when I think about it is that 50% of those individuals over 85 will get dementia.
Mm, right.
So, you know, to see it in the younger years is not as common, especially 40s, 50s,
right.
Early 60s.
Right.
But you almost expect you might see some form of it as a person ages in the higher decades of life.
Yeah, my mother was, well, we couldn't have, we had four kids and, you know, my working and everything, so we couldn't handle her. So we had her in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And she was fine, you know, until she was about 92. You know, I'd go visit her and she'd, you know, say, oh, you know what I did today? No, what'd you do? Oh, so-and-so came over. And we had breakfast and talked. And, oh, really? You know, so-and-so's been dead for like 15 years, but that, you know.
What a good son to just let her reminisce that
way. Hey, you know, what am I going to tell her? No? You know, okay, you did that. That's great.
Some
you
people
know.
Would.
No, I just, you know. But then the last 2 years that she was alive, she just didn't talk at all.
Yes.
She just...
That's the end stages of it.
You know,
it.
And she would,
yeah.
And you go visit her and you talk to her and she'd just look at you with that angry look on her face, which my mother was from Germany and she had this angry look, you know, if she could put it on anyway. But, you know, it's just, it's sad to see people, you know, especially family that get this. And it's sad to see anybody get it, you know. I mean, here's,
definitely.
You know, here's a human being and they're like, living in another world, you know. Well, like I said, the first couple of years with my mother, it was okay. So she had these delusional things because the first couple of years she was in the nursing home, she would go on trips with him in the bus and, you know, all that. She was fine. And then it was just like, you know, she thought one of my sons was her daughter, her granddaughter, you know. And it was like, you know, kind of tough, you know. But, you know, just was the way it was, you know.
Yes,
but
yes.
So wasn't going to change. So you just, you know, you live with it.
And some people also have cardiovascular disease, which is a very common reason people might have dementia symptoms as well. People have had strokes or mini strokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over time, that'll take a toll. We've seen people with a mixed dementia where they've had Alzheimer's and cardiovascular dementia. And so as someone ages, you can expect cardiovascular disease, and you can also have the dementia as well. So it can be hard for some families. They really get hit hard with that.
Do you see a predominant lack of memory, or is it varied? In other words, it's like what types of memory loss do you see? What types of problems?
Well, it depends. You know, it depends on what stage they're in. Generally, for the memory center, it's a younger person who's still pretty functional, but they're having difficulty maybe at their job if there's problems with trying to do the math or trying to remember data, or maybe they're used to getting into multiple programs on a computer, and all of a sudden they're having difficulties doing that, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. So we try to look and see, do they have any diseases? Do they have diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, any other chronic illness? Are they under control? Because the brain is dependent on the body to keep it healthy.
Right.
And if you're not keeping your chronic illnesses under control, control your blood sugar, control your high blood pressure, get your cholesterol down, eat healthy, do the different things that you need to do. We have to kind of help people remember that's important. That's a big part of it. It's not always about a pill. It's sometimes about doing the right things for the individual's needs. And so we try to help people with that. And we need to know their background to see what might be a contributing factor to their memory issues as well.
Right.
Depression is a big thing. You know, you can have a lot of people with depression on top of having memory problems. People get depressed. They can't function as well. We see that in the early stages even of Alzheimer's disease.
Sure.
But if you treat the depression, you might find that their function, their ability to function, improves. So it's always important to look at that component as well.
Yeah, my wife and I are highly involved with NAMI and the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Hunterdon County. And, we teach classes and run support groups and stuff. And, you know, you see it all the time, you know, that people with, not the people, but the family member has depression or, you know. And it's like, you know, and some families just don't get it, you know. They just don't understand, you know. And, you know, you try to help them through it, you know.
Well, 66% of caregivers caring for some loved one with dementia will have significant depression. And what we find, especially as the dementia progresses, the caregiver has a hard time keeping up doing all the things that need to be done that normally was done by the person they're caring for.
Sure.
Plus their own work.
Right.
And so there's no room them to take care of themselves.
Right.
And that's a hard lesson. Even if we tell them, you're going to need help, think about that. We'll help you with resources and that kind of thing. But it's very hard for people. You know, they feel like, oh, I'm going to do it all. And
yeah,
it'll get them down. It really
will. It will. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to the Hunterdon Medical Center Show. And we're very privileged to have Linda Bryant, who's the director of Center of Healthy Aging. And we've been talking about dementia and Alzheimer's. And we will be back in just a few moments.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntonChamberRadio.com app today.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Sharon Skibbe of CompuPay Payroll. The Chamber is a great way to connect to other businesses within Hunterdon County and build strong and lasting business relationships.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smith, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Welcome back. This is the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce's hour devoted to the Hunterdon Medical Center. And I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and Linda Bryan is here. She's the director for the Center of Healthy Aging. And I hope I am healthy when I age. Yeah, like I haven't already aged. We've been talking pretty much about memory loss and dementia, Alzheimer's. And what type of behaviors do you see people who come in with a memory loss? What is there a typical type of behavior that they have, or
The kinds of behavior that you might see, as I had mentioned a little earlier, sometimes they're a little depressed because right. They can't function the way they're used to. Sometimes they're anxious, especially if they're going to be coming in for evaluation and they may be given a diagnosis. Many times you'll see that they're easily frustrated and they're a little resistant. But all in all, I think we have very compassionate social workers that work with them during the testing. Our physicians are very understanding, very knowledgeable, and want to give them back as much quality of life as possible. So we try everything we can to get to the bottom of what the issue is and try to educate so mm-hmm. We can eliminate some of the anxiety and some of the depression. Mm-hmm. And if they do need something for depression, which would be totally understandable, we do recommend treatment so that there would be right. Some quality of life that comes back. The memory center is very important, particularly there are a lot of young people out there that are in the very early stages of dementia. And the reason I say that is, you know, I just recently came back from the Alzheimer's annual conference on Friday. And one of the things that was said was that before symptoms show, where, you know, you're really having mm-hmm. Struggles, the development of the plaques and tangles that are caused by the disease right. Have probably been in the brain developing over the four or five-year period prior to symptoms showing. So it's important to get people in the early stages so that we can prepare them. Right. So that we can right. Give them a chance to set their affairs in order while they can still do the things that they're doing. It would be criminal in my mind to know that someone has a dementia but not give them the tools to give them the direction for both them and their loved ones to take to get things in order.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
And that's what we try to do.
Right. Do you find that the caregivers, how do they cope with this? I mean, you know, what do they have to do to cope with it? I mean, I know with mental illness and families that we deal with, we say that in order to care for your loved one who has a mental illness, you got to care for yourself.
Absolutely.
So, you know, even if it's take the dog for a walk around a block or read a book or whatever, go for a walk, go sit in a backyard and just look at the stars or whatever the case may be. Whatever you enjoy doing, you should do. What do you recommend the caregivers? The same thing? Or?
Well, we want them to take care of themselves, too. Everyone does things differently.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It's just human nature. Some people can cope better than others. There are some people who may have, if they're taking care of parents and there is a bad history where there was a lot of abuse in the family, mm-hmm. we may recommend to that family, look, we know you want to do what's best, but you may want to give yourself some breaks here. Maybe bring in some other caregivers so that you don't get overwhelmed, get pushed right. to the wall where right. you hit a breaking point. Because when that happens, then you have to worry about abuse, and you don't want that to happen because you don't want to put them in that position. So you have to be very careful with your recommendations for that. There are some people, no matter what you say, oh, I can do it all, I can do it all.
And yeah.
that's why we want to see them back. And we always say, come back if there's any changes, anything in the way of behavior that's difficult for you to manage that seems to be getting worse because it's the next phase. And it's important that when the phases change, that the families are educated at the same time so that they know what mm-hmm. direction to go in and what to do. What are the next things that I should be doing?
Right.
So we recommend really wholeheartedly caregiver support groups. Many times during this stage when dementia symptoms in particular get worse, families don't have the same social structure that they had before this whole thing right. came upon them. And they lose friends. You know, it's hard for them to get together. The person who has the dementia isn't appropriate or, you know, mm-hmm. they're uncomfortable or they're just not comfortable socially anymore. So the caregiver still has a life, but they have to learn, and they need to be with people that are understanding, that have been sure. going through it. And caregiver support groups are wonderful because each one of those individuals have either been there, are going through it, and they sympathize. They understand.
Sure.
Those that have, you know, sort of the pioneers, they're giving you, well, I went through this and this is what I did. You may want to try this or right. that or whatever. And they feel very supported, and that's what they need. They need a support system.
Right.
And I think it's very helpful for them emotionally in getting through that.
We have the same thing with NAMI and the mental health.
Right.
We have support groups that we run. And, yeah, it's the same thing. People may be just starting to get into it. Others are in the middle of it, and others, like myself, have gone through it already for the last 20 years. And, you know, you can, like you said, well, we did this. It worked for us. You know, you might want to try it. It may not work for you, but you try it, you
right.
know.
Right.
Or there may be something else, you know. But at least they come to a support group, and they're with a group of people who understand.
Absolutely.
You know, at least they can feel comfortable with the people. They're not being judged, you know, or, you know, because all these people are going through the same thing.
Exactly.
Know, like you said, and that's
it's amazing the bonds that I have seen develop over the years between people when they're in support groups for mm-hmm. a while. Even after sometimes the patient with the dementia has passed on, some of them have stayed in the group because
right.
they need that support. And actually, they may help the next group that are going in through that transition
right.
as well.
Right, yeah. And they can give their, you know, their knowledge that they've
Absolutely.
Achieved, you know,
Absolutely.
That they've attained. What services, what other services does the Healthy Aging provide?
Well, I have two wonderful, very dedicated, licensed social workers. They have their master's degree in social work. And they're very, very knowledgeable of all the resources in our county and even in some of the connecting counties like Mercer, Somerset, and Warren County. And so they're constantly on the phone with family, you know, helping them out, getting them to the right spot that they need to. They're there for the calls that come in saying, I need to get my mom evaluated. And we take them through an intake process, get the story. You know, it's always about the story. Why? How are we doing this? Why are we doing this? And it's many times very important for the caregiver to be able to tell them what they've been going through. This isn't just about the patient, because the evaluation is also about the family unit that's doing the primary care of that individual with the dementia. So we have to hear what's going on there, so we have both sides of the coin. And so, as I said, it's not just about medicine. Sometimes it's just about social issues. It may be about financial issues. And so we're there to try to cover all that we can.
And, you know, I would think, I know that it was very, I was an only child. And it was very hard when you're noticing things. I mean, my mother lived in Teaneck and we lived down here. So we, you know, you'd drive up and, you know, and you'd see things. And it's, you know, and it didn't register right away, you know. But what do they say? Hindsight's 20/20, you know. But you look back and you say, "My God, I should have picked up on that," you know. But you didn't, because you weren't expecting it, you know. My mother was a very strong, you know,
willed,
you know, her way or the highway individual, you know. And I don't know whether that's the German background or what, but you know, she came over and, you know, early in her life, and you know.
I think sometimes, you know, when adult children are faced with their parents beginning to decline, it is hard to face it. And I think there's an element of respect that you want to give them, and it's sometimes difficult to do both, to give them the respect but also direct them into where they've been kind of resisting the help or whatever. And, you know, it may start with, you know, mom can't get out to the stores anymore. How does she get her food in? Or the house isn't as clean as it used to be. You know, the laundry's not getting done. Or, you know, you see a lot of clutter in the house. She just isn't able to get the things out the door to the garbage or whatever. We just, you know, do our best to respect them, but it comes a point where sometimes you have to make the leap, and we try to help people through that.
Yeah, it was very difficult for me. In fact, it was a neighbor who called and said, you better come up here because your mom is not well at all. And, you know, and it was like we had gone. I had been up, I don't know, about a week or so before. And it was in that week that it just, you know, went south. I mean, really south, you know. And like I said, hindsight, we should have picked. I should have picked up on it, but you know,
so many of our parents, and it was similar for myself with both my parents. They want their control. They don't want their decisions made for themselves. Right. They want to do it by anybody else but themselves, and in so doing, they're resisting the care and the help that they need. And so often it's when, you know what, hits the fan that we're finally called in because a neighbor or a friend or someone else or even the doctor might say, your mother's in the emergency room. We need you here. You know, it sometimes takes a major crisis to get involved and do something different.
Right, you know. Do you have any tips to keep the mind sharp?
Yeah. One of the best things that I think anybody can do, particularly if they're retiring, is to stay involved with groups. Whether you go on trips or you go to learn something new, you can go back to school if you want, stay around with family, visit with grandchildren, but staying involved, staying engaged is very, very important. Isolation is not a good thing.
I work harder now than when I worked.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. That's what's keeping you so healthy. Yeah. But volunteering is another way to do it. Right. You know, if you don't know what to do and you're sort of in the middle, volunteer until you figure out something that
hospital
you really want to do.
Hospital always looking for volunteers in
Absolutely.
Hunterdon County.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm sure if you're not in Hunterdon County, since this is the internet and it goes all over, your county where you are, I'm sure, you know, hospital will be looking for there too.
Absolutely.
And there's certainly other places, you know, food pantries and stuff like that will always looking for volunteers.
But the main thing too is you want to keep yourself healthy. If you have chronic illnesses that really need medications or monitoring, make sure that you're doing that, because keeping the body healthy is going to keep the brain healthy.
Right.
At least it will eliminate any of additional factors that can influence the brain. So eating well, sleeping properly, but also learning something new. Learn something, whether it be a language, an instrument, do some new puzzles, you know, do it with the kids, the grandchildren. Learn something on your iPhone that you didn't do. Learn something on your computer that you haven't done before. Anything.
Play Scrabble with your wife, who always beats me.
That's you know? Exactly right. But it's staying involved and keeping yourself as healthy as you possibly
right.
can.
Right. In the closing minute or two, if someone needed an appointment, how would they arrange that?
Well, whether you would like a geriatric assessment for the older adults or for the memory for younger people, you can call the same number, just tell them which one you want, or they will ask you anyway. And the number is 908-788-6373. That's 908-788-6373. And our office coordinator will pick up the phone and greet you and just tell them what you'd like, and you'll probably be either transferred to the social work or to myself.
And what are the hours for your office?
We are open Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure, Linda, having you on.
Thank you so much, Larry, for having me.
It's, you know, I think that the more that the word gets out, and, you know, I think that more people need it, and, you know, the more, like I said, the word gets out, the more they understand and what is available, and, you know.
The bottom line is we really want to be there for families and individuals that are going through any kind of a memory crisis.
Right.
Call us. We want to be there for you.
What's that number again real quick?
908-788-6373.
Okay, folks, we appreciate you listening, and we'll be back again next week, same time, same station. And enjoy the week and stay healthy.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Audrey Strong.
At least 20 people are injured after a terrorist attack in Jerusalem. Police there say the bus explosion was caused by a bomb, which also damaged a second nearby bus. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has destroyed a Hamas tunnel that had penetrated southern Israel. It's the first to be detected since the end of the last war in Gaza in 2014. The tunnel, about 30 to 40 meters deep, lined with concrete slabs and equipped with communication lines, air supply, and rails for further excavation, was uncovered last week, although its existence was confirmed only today. The tunnel reportedly entered Israel in an area some distance from Israeli military bases and civilian homes. This is USA Radio News. Breaking news online at usaradio.com.
And now, a touching moment while staying in touch with Geico.
Just the other night, as I gazed up into the sky, I saw a shooting star. In that moment, I made a wish that Geico would be available 24/7, by phone, on the web, or with the Geico app. After that, I realized my wish had already come true. So basically, I had just wasted a perfectly good wish. Then I started to think about dolphins and felt better right away.
Geico. Anywhere. Anytime.